Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, Pardes alum. This week, Yitro. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Yitro. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week is Parshat Yitro, and I thought we would spend our time together this week trying to get to know the personality, Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, the personality who gives his name to the parasha. Because Yitro is really an intriguing and fascinating person whose mindset and ideology, I think, has a lot to say to us as modern people, especially in a millennial age. Let's begin from the opening lines of the parasha to see the arrival of Yitro as Bnei Yisrael, as the Israelites are encamped, and they're on their way to Mount Sinai. They're traveling on their journey through the wilderness. They're almost at Mount Sinai. And at this point, we hear the following. Vayishma Yitro Kohen Midyan Chotein Moshe Et kol asher asa Elohim leMoshe uliYisrael amo Ki hotzi Hashem et Yisrael Mitzrayim. Yitro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, how the Lord had brought Israel out from Egypt. And it says that Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, came along to the encampment. Vayisaper Moshe lechotano et kol asher asa Hashem lefaro lemitzrayim al odot Yisrael. Moses recounted to his father-in-law everything that God had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sakes. Et kol hatla'a shematzatem baderech vayitzilem Hashem. All the hardships that had befallen them on the way and the way that God had delivered them. Vayichad Yitro. Yitro rejoiced. Al kol hatova asher hasa Hashem l'Yisrael. Over all the kindness that God had shown Israel. Asher hitzilo miyad Mitzrayim. The way that God had saved them, delivered them, the word hitzil, already the second time it's come up. In the last verse, vayatzilem Hashem, here asher hitzilo miyad Mitzrayim, that they were saved from Egypt. And he says, Baruch Hashem asher hitzil etchem miyad Mitzrayim, a third time. Blessed is God who delivered you from Egyptians and from Pharaoh, who delivered you from under the hands of Egypt. Ata yadati, now I know, ki gadol Hashem mikol Elohim. Now I know that God is the greatest of gods. And what Yitro then does is he brings a burnt offering and sacrifices for God, and it seems like Moses and Aaron and all the elders of Israel partake in a meal before God. What we see here is that Yitro, who himself seems like he is a religious man, he is the priest of Midian, and he certainly seems a religiously attuned man. Moses tells him all about the word that comes up four times in this episode is Hitzil, that God has saved the Jewish people. And as a result of that, Yitro says, Blessed is God who delivered you from Egypt and from Pharaoh. Now I know that God is greater than all other gods. The rabbis, when they talk about Yitro, the Mechilta here in Parshat Yitro says, Now I know that God is greater than all the deities. Lo hinyach Yitro avodazara b'chol ha'olam shelo chazara leha v'avda. There was not one type of idolatry in the world, not one pagan deity that Jethro had not worshipped. But now what does he say? Ata yadati ki gadol Hashem mikol ha'elohim. Now I know that the God of Israel is the greatest of all gods. In this regard, Yitro is seen as a convert. He is seen as somebody who abandons his idolatry and is seen as coming close to God, proclaiming the supremacy of God. And I would say, what seems to impress him? What seems to give him that sense of vayichad, that sense of joy, right? Chedva, joy. Or Rashi actually gives a different interpretation where he says that his skin became chadudim, chadudim. He had goosebumps. He had the shivers when he heard about the salvation of Israel from the Egyptians. I would argue that one of the things that seems to motivate Yitro more than anything else is the question of justice. Suddenly, in a world of power history, Yitro has found a God who represents the underdog, who represents the slaves. Usually in the pagan world, the gods are gods of power, and whoever is more powerful, well, might is right, and the more powerful God will be higher up in the pantheon. However, suddenly, Yitro finds a deity who represents the slave people. And that's why it says, what motivated Yitro to come? Because he heard about how God had brought Israel out of Egypt. And this repetitive word, Hitzil, 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 this salvation is really what motivates Yitro to come. I say this sense of justice because in the very next scene, from verse 13 onwards, we see Moses sitting as a magistrate amongst the people, and the people are standing before Moses from morning till evening, and Moses' father-in-law, Yitro, turns around to him and says, what are you doing to the people? Ma ha-davar asha-ata oseh la'am? Madua ata yoshev levadecha? Why are you sitting alone? And he tells him, if you carry on doing this, you're simply going to burn out. It is not good for you. It is not good for the people. And that's when we see Yitro renovating or rehabilitating the justice system. And they establish a system of courts, Sarei Alafim, the Sarei Meot, Sarei Alafim, the Sarei Sarot, officers of tens, of hundreds, of thousands, so that Moses will get the most difficult cases, but the other cases will be adjudicated by the lower courts. In this regard, Yitro becomes a champion of justice. And it might be indeed this justice which really motivates him to be so enamored with the God of Israel, that the God of Israel has taken up the lot of the slave peoples. Maybe I'll add another couple of points in this regard because I want to take this a little further. But this episode of Yitro's arrival, chapter 18 in Shemot, comes immediately after and in close proximity to the attack of Amalek, which is the last thing we read in chapter 17 at the end of Parashat B'Shalach. And I'm not going to go into the enormous number of similarities between the two parashiyot, something which Professor Kasuto has brought out, and brought out the number of textual similarities. But I'll simply quote the Ibn Ezra, where the Ibn Ezra says, Lama nichnesa parashat Yitro b'makom hazeh? Why is the Yitro narrative located at this particular juncture in Chumash? And the answer he gives, Ba'avur shehizkir l'mala hara'a she'asa Amalek Yisrael. After the Torah has just brought a story in which Amalek have attacked Israel in an evil manner, in an opportunistic manner, attacking a weak and defenseless people and using violence in order to attack the nation of Israel, as a counterbalance, says Ibn Ezra, his Kir Kenegdo, it mentions as a counterbalance, HaTovah She'asa Yitro LiYisrael, the good that Yitro did for Israel. Yitro is the counterbalance to Amalek. Amalek have no moral compunctions. They see the weak and they prey on them. Yitro sees the weak and he says, who is going to look out for them? He is a person filled with a sense of justice. And when he sees a God who represents justice, he proclaims him. However, here I want to start raising some interesting questions about Yitro. Because chapter 18 is all about Jethro, first his arrival and how he proclaims the supremacy of God and brings sacrifices to Hashem and has a meal, a sacrificial meal with the elders of Israel, with Moses and Aaron. And afterwards, of course, how he manages to assist Moshe to create a new justice system and spread the Chukei HaElohim V'Torotav, the laws of God. And as I mentioned before, the rabbinic read is that Yitro is Yitro Hager. He becomes a convert. He converts to the Jewish faith, or at least comes round to believing in God as the ultimate deity. And that would be fine if not for the following detail. If you look at the last verse in chapter 18, and it's the verse immediately preceding chapter 19 and 20, which deal with Matan Torah, which deal with the whole spectacle at Har Sinai, Ma'amad Har Sinai, where Israel receive the law and hear the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai. What happens in the last line of the story? Vayishlach Moshe et chotano, vayelech lo el arzo. Moses bade his father-in-law farewell, and he went on his way back to his own land. Yitro does not stay for Matan Torah. Yitro goes back home before the main event. Don't you think that a religious man who was so attracted to the God of Israel would want to stay for the moment of revelation itself? And this isn't only isolated here. We see Moshe's father-in-law, or possibly his son, return as Israel are on their way to the promised land. This we find in Bamidbar, chapter 10, where the people of Israel are leaving Mount Sinai, and they are about to embark on their journey, on their great march, on the mission to go to the promised land. And indeed, I'll read you the passage from Bamidbar, Perek Yud, Pasuk Chavtet, Bamidbar chapter 10, verse 29. Moses said to Chovav, the son of Reuel the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law. Again, it's not clear whether this is Moses' father-in-law or his son. But he says, Nosim anachnu, we are traveling to the place which God has said, I will give to you. Come with us. Lecha itanu, come with us. Ve'itavnu lach, and we'll be generous with you, for God has promised to be good to Israel. And he says, Lo elech, I don't want to come with you. Ki em el aratzi ve'el ladati elech. I'll go back to my land, if you will. And Moshe says to him, please don't abandon us. You can be our guide here, and you've been so wonderful to us. And he doesn't even respond. There seems to be a pattern whereby Yitro or Yitro's descendants, at the critical moments of peoplehood, where the Jewish people are about to accept the Torah, when the Jewish people are about to hear revelation, they leave. At the critical moments when the Jewish people are marching to their future to establish themselves as a nation state in their own land, they offer an invitation to the family of Yitro. Come with us, it'll be so good. God, you've been good to us. We want to be good to you. Come join our future and be a partner with us. And what happens? They say, sorry, we don't want to be there. We don't want to come. We're going back home. You might think this would be an isolated situation, but consistently we find the Yitro descendants always in a relationship with Israel, not quite with us, and yet with us. What do I mean? If you look, for example, at last week's Haftarah, the story of Yael, Eshet Chever HaKeni, the story of Devorah, the prophetess, there is a scene with Sisera, our dire enemy, who encounters somebody called Yael. Yael eventually kills Sisera. The situation there is that Sisera is the ardent enemy of Israel. And this is what we read there. It says, Chever the Kenites was from the descendants of Chovav, Moshe's father-in-law. And he had pinched his tent at Elon Betzaananim. And what happens is that Sisera, our enemy, flees on foot to the wife of Chever the Kenite. And it says why? There was a friendship between Yavin of Chatzor and Chever the Kenite. But in the end, what does Yael do? She kills Sisera. What this shows us is that the Kenites, who are the descendants of Chovav, that's what it tells us in the book of Judges chapter 4, sort of are friends with Israel, and we know their association with Israel, but they're also friends with our enemies. This is true later on in the book of Samuel, where we find that it is Yitro's descendants who live sort of again in a sort of twilight zone, not quite in Israel and not quite with Amalek. Israel have a terrible relationship with Amalek, and yet the Canaanim, the descendants of Yitro, live in between the cultures. What am I trying to say about Yitro? Yitro believes in justice. Yitro has a fascination with God. Yitro feels that the God of Israel is special and values his relationship with the Jewish people. However, he doesn't become a convert. He does not become an Israelite. He does not become a Jew. And the rabbis illustrated this in a fascinating midrash. You might have noticed that there are lots of different names for Yitro. In one place, Yitro is called Yitro, and then he's called Yeter, and then he's referred to as Ruel or Chovav. And the rabbis say he was called by seven names. And they relate to his seven names. Yeter, Yitro, Chovav, Ruel, Chever, Putiel, Keni. And they give reasons for each of the names. But somebody who has seven names has seven identities. Somebody who has seven names, and this goes together with the Midrashic tradition that Yitro had, when Yitro said, "Now I know that God is greater, Hashem is greater than all other gods," Yitro had actually tried out every religion. Yitro was a seeker. He was a seeker of truth. And even though he had made the statement that Gadol Hashem Mikol HaElohim, God is greater than all other gods, he was unable to commit to Judaism in particular. He was unable to find that commitment to a given tradition and to a given historical entity. He couldn't commit. The question is why? Why couldn't he commit? I'm going to deal with this in a moment, but I want to explain how the way I am portraying Yitro here might also be able to explain something else in a different story. We all know the early stories of Moshe, of Moses. Moses in chapter 2 of Shemot comes over as a warrior for justice. There are three stories about Moses before he's chosen as the leader of the Jewish people. The first is when he goes out as a young adult and he sees an Egyptian striking a Jew. And he's so outraged that he strikes the Egyptian back and kills him. In the second scene, he sees two Jews fighting and he says to the aggressor, "Why are you hitting your friend? Why are you hitting your kinsman?" Again, he intervenes. They answer him back. But in the third scene, once he's already been found that he killed the Egyptian, he escapes to Midian, and suddenly at the wellside in Midian, he sees a whole bunch of shepherds picking on Yitro's daughters. And he saves these damsels in distress, he saves these daughters, and drives away these aggressive shepherds. Moshe Rabbeinu in his early life seems very determined, very resolute. Whenever he sees injustice, whenever he sees an underdog, he intervenes. He almost cannot stand by and see oppression. I would argue that this is the reason why God chooses him, and this is the reason why we see these three stories. As Nechama Leibovitz, our teacher, has taught us, well, the first story is about a Jew and a non-Jew, the second story about two Jews, the third story about two non-Jews. This is a universal sense of justice that animates Moshe. And he isn't only animated by a sense of justice, but by a desire to intervene and even to put his own personal future on the line. After all, he has to run away from Egypt because his intervention was discovered. Even if he pays a high personal price, he will act in order to save the oppressed from their oppressor. This is a very impressive image of Moshe. How surprising, then, that when God comes to Moses to give him the offer, "I have a slave people, and I want you to save them," what does Moshe say at the burning bush? "Sorry, God, I can't do it. Sorry. I'm not a man of words. What am I going to say to Pharaoh?" Moshe comes up with every excuse in the book. every excuse possible. Why isn't Moshe say, oh, those Jewish people, I saw them suffering in, those Israelites, I saw them suffering in Egypt. I saw their taskmasters. I saw the way that they were bleeding and weary and I want to help. What happens? The answer is something comes in between the three stories of Moshe saving people and the burning bush. And what is that? He met Yitro. He met Yitro. By the way, there also the word comes of Hitzil, of salvation, because it said the daughters of Yitro come back and they say, Ish Mitzri Hatzilanu Miyad Haroim. An Egyptian man saved us from the shepherds. And immediately, Yitro turns around to his daughters and says, so where is he? Va'ayo, where is he? Why did you leave him there? Call him, let him come and eat with us. And at that point it says, Va'yoel Moshe la'shevet et ha'ish. Moses consented to stay with the man, and he gave Moses, his daughter Zipporah, as a wife. Moshe seems even more interested in Yitro than he is with Zipporah. Yitro and Moshe share a belief in justice. However, I would argue that Yitro is a person who doesn't necessarily commit to a given way and to a given affiliation. Because, of course, justice sometimes has, if you commit yourself to a particular people, to a particular system, there are frequently situations in which you are committed to a given way, even with its injustices. I would argue that Moshe, I wouldn't quite say he becomes a pacifist, but Moshe's inability to commit to being the leader of the Jewish people at the burning bush is a reflection of his association with Yitro. And here, let me try and illustrate this with two examples, or even maybe three. The first is an amazing midrash which talks about Pharaoh. And that Pharaoh had three advisors. This is a Gemara from Sotah, Daf Yud Aleph, from the Talmud Sotah. Rabbi Chiya said in the name of Rabbi Shimon that Pharaoh, when he consulted to annihilate or to enslave the Jews, he had three advisors. The first was Bilam, the second was Eov, Job, and the third was Yitro. Bilam, who later wants to curse the Jews, advised to kill the Jews, and he was killed. Eov sat in the cabinet room while they were discussing it in silence, and his punishment was that he suffered in silence. What did Yitro do? Yitro ran away. Yitro resigned from the government, and off he went to the wilderness of Yitro, to the wilderness of Midian, and he was praised. Yitro sees great evil in government, and he decides that much better to withdraw to the wilderness, to Midian, to not commit to a given regime, because all regimes support their regime and oppress others. And he withdraws to the wilderness and doesn't get involved. And maybe this explains, again, his reticence from staying there when Israel decides to make their own nation state, and also when they commit to a particular religion. He is a man of spirituality, but not a man of religion. Later on, in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 35, we hear of a family called the household of the Rechavites, B'nai Rechav. And they are pitted against the evil and corrupt regime of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah. And Jeremiah talks about them and uses them as an example of... And this is what Yonadav ben Rechav says about himself. He says, we never drink wine, for our ancestor Yonadav of Rechav said, you shall never drink wine, and you shall never build houses, you should never sow fields or plant vineyards, and you shall own such things. You should just live in tents all your days, so you will live long upon the land where you sojourn. Yitro's descendants have a tradition. We don't drink wine, we don't buy real estate, we don't settle down, we are nomads, we live between cultures. Just like Yitro, who ran off to the desert, just like Yitro, who sees the prospect of Matan Torah, the receipt of the law, and says, sorry, I love this God, but I'm not willing to commit to a given system of law because that ties me down. I am going to live in my own sense of truth. But every tradition has its sharp edges. Every bit of nation building, the minute you have to defend your borders, you have to engage in violence. I'd much prefer to be a nomad. I'd much prefer not to have a field. I'd prefer not to have a country. I'm not coming with you to the land of Israel, and if I do, I will live between you and between another culture because I want to live just with a sense of truth. Now, I think for many people this is very attractive. I can certainly see, living here in the modern state of Israel, which for me is a fulfillment of so many of our Jewish dreams, I can see, and having sent a son to the army and will send others, I can see how having a country, even with the most ethical of armies in the world, even with governments who are sworn to high principles, there will always be murky moral areas in governance, in defense. There will always be areas of halakha, as there are in every legal system, which sometimes will create grief and distress. And therefore I can understand Yitro. But what is the price of Yitro's purism? The price of his purism is that you never step foot on the stage of history. Because if you're going to just be a citizen of the world, which country are you going to live in? Can you always live in a tent between cultures? Eventually, don't we have to step onto the stage of history, even with all its difficulty and nuance, and actually take a stand to become a player amongst the nations of the world? Can we just say that we will withdraw from governance and have our own sort of moral way? Or do we have to actually establish a system of law which will bind us and our children after us? Because it is better to have an ethical tradition, the Torah, which has affected the whole of civilization, even with some of its sharp edges, than to have no code at all. And this is expressed in the final midrash that we're going to look at, which comes again from the Mechilta here at the beginning of Yitro, which says the following. It says, "B'shah she'amar Moshe li'Yitro tein li tzipora b'itcha li'isha." That when Moshe wanted to marry Tzipora, the daughter of Yitro, he made a condition. His condition was, let your first son not be committed to Judaism. Let your first son be a seeker like me. Let your first son go to Avodah Zarah. Let him try out this God and that God and this God and that God. And Moshe agreed. He said, all your other children can go in the tradition of your fathers, but the first son, the Bechor, let him be in the way that I go. A free thinker, a seeker, and all of that. However, Moshe agreed to this, but at the moment that Moshe was re-entering Egypt, chapter 4 of Shemot, God comes to him and accuses him and says, why have you not circumcised your son? To be a Jew is to commit yourself to peoplehood, to a particular relationship with a particular people. We are not citizens of the world, we're part of the Jewish people. To be a Jew means to stand at Sinai and say Na'aseh v'nishma, that we believe in a particular way. To be a Jew means to go to the land of Israel and to commit yourself to a particular type of nationhood. And that is the legacy which we bear. And therefore I think that Yitro really does throw up a challenge to all of us. On the one hand, Yitro is a spectacular ally. I think Moshe found him attractive because Yitro is interested in people who save the underdog, and that's where Moshe was at that time. Ish mitzri hatzilanu miyad haro'im. In the same way as Yitro is attracted to Baruch Hashem, blessed is God, asher hitzil etchem miyad mitzrayim. But is pure, distilled justice possible in a world of people and nations and religions? Or do we have to try and make the best religion that we can, the best nation that we can, and tread onto the stage of history with all the flaws that exist, but actually create a system that will work as best as possible. And this is where I see Yitro coming along. As I say, a tremendous ally, a tremendous role model, the priest of Midian who discovers God and yet is in a very, very different space to us. As we go through the book of Shemot and start developing us as a nation with national institutions and with a code, Yitro represents an alternative situation, but the path that Judaism decided not to tread, the path not taken. We will leave it there. I hope this has given food for thought, and I wish you all a wonderful week and a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.